God, you know what? This is like talking to Bubs from Homestar Runner. This is straight up. This is the Bubs class. Everybody, I'm Faith.
And I'm Lewis.
Welcome back to another episode of Deck of Crotchety Things. This episode, we are going to talk about warlocks because warlocks is like if you look at Twitter, everybody plays a warlock in fifth edition. Well, this is where warlocks came from in 3.5. Now, I'm going into this completely blind because I feel like there needs to be a hot take on this. So, I haven't looked at anything that Lewis sent me about warlocks until now. But he knows more about it than I do because he's been reading it longer and stuff. So, it's going to be one of those episodes where it's just like, "Oh, what's this? This is the hot take. This is new person looking at a class."
So you piped me up a little bit here because the majority of my third edition Warlock exposure was a friend of mine turned to me one day and he says, "Oh, can I play a Warlock in the next campaign or as my next character?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure. What book's it in?" He was like, "Oh, it's in the Complete Arcane book." Now, I don't normally like splat books because the biggest issue with game problems from where I sit is that people use too much from outside of core. The core three books being Player's Handbook, Monster Manual, and DMG. But the complete books, which are Complete Adventurer, Complete Arcane, Complete Warrior, Complete Divine, Complete Scoundrel, there's a few of them. Those are pretty okay. Like, I'm pretty chill to have those. And so he said, "Oh, I want to play a Warlock." I was like, "Okay, let me have a look." And I had a look, and I just got assaulted by the sheer amount of text, which exclusively said, "Warlocks ignore all the rules about spell casting and then just kind of do their own thing, so shut up and let them do it." And I,
Edgy from the start.
yeah, and I told him no. And since then, I have felt bad because they aren't unbalanced from where I stand. They do sound really, really powerful, and they are really, really powerful. But much like sorcerers who lost a lot of the flexibility of a wizard so that they were able to cast more spells more often. Well, no, the wizard can cast the most spells. The sorcerer can cast less spells, but more often. The warlock can kind of hack the system to effectively cast a spell the most often, but it is such a small number of spells, it's ridiculous.
So it's almost like where wizards become specialized, warlocks become hyper specialized.
Warlocks are a laser beam of focus. They're very good at what they do. They're incredibly good at what they do, but they can only really do what they build themselves to do. You can make a warlock that's an absolute monster in melee. You can make a warlock that is a super cool scout. You can make all kinds of warlocks, but they're very narrowly focused. And we'll get to that when we get to that.
All right. So shall we dive in then?
Yes. Do you want to read the first section
Sure.
under
So
the header?
I've got the PDF pulled up, and it starts with warlocks. Born of a supernatural bloodline, a warlock seeks to master the perilous magic that suffuses his soul. Unlike sorcerers or wizards who approach arcane magic through the medium of spells, a warlock invokes powerful magic through nothing more than an effort of will. By harnessing his innate magical gift through fearsome determination and force of will, a warlock can perform feats of supernatural stealth, beguile the weak-minded, or scour his foes with blasts of eldritch power. Adventures. Many warlocks are champions of dark and chaotic powers. Long ago, they, or in some cases their ancestors, forged grim pacts with dangerous extraplanar powers, trading portions of their souls in exchange for supernatural power. While many warlocks have turned away from evil, seeking to undo the wrongs of their former colleagues, they are still chained by the old pacts through which they acquired their powers. The demand to further the designs of their dark patrons or to resist them drives most warlocks to seek the opportunities for power, wealth, and great deeds, for good or ill, offered by adventuring.
So, what we can see here is that a warlock is already similar to sorcerers in that it's a gifted blood. There's a gifted bloodline. Whether it be from devils, demons, dragons, genie. People can give you power, but unlike with sorcerers where it's just yours, with a warlock it's kind of on loan. It's given on condition.
I like this setup better because the possibility of it's not you that made the deal, it was your father, your grandfather, great-great-grandfather, you know, made a deal with somebody, and now, you know, it's kind of like this, the sins of the father are delivered onto the son, basically.
Yeah, like it could absolutely have been that your great-grandfather made a pact with Orcus to, maybe not Orcus, maybe Vecna, to be the bodyguard of a lich, and that lich then fell, so did your grandfather, and now your family has had all these struggles and whatnot, and you're just like, well, I can shoot laser bolts out of my hands because of demon magic. Time to go right some wrongs, fellas.
Yeah. So I like that it's not just you that make the pact with this ultra-powerful being.
Yep.
Like, you're the product of it.
I don't mind that it can be you as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I do quite like the flavor of the pacts in 5th edition. I just find it a bit narrow sometimes.
Yeah.
whereas this, it's just super open.
Santa.
You are still somewhat bound in the contract to have this power, you know, make that it's just going to be fodder for the GM to roleplay with you. It's going to be grand. Anything else?
Well, there's characteristics. Warlocks harbor great reserves of mystical energy. The font of dark magic burning in their souls makes them resistant to many forms of attack and arms them with dangerous power. Warlocks do not wield spells, but they do learn to harness their power to perform a small number of specific attacks and tricks called invocations. Warlocks make up for their lack of versatility by being tougher and more resilient than sorcerers or wizards.
Yeah, so again, they've given up on the day-to-day flexibility of a wizard, and even the flexibility of a sorcerer to have honestly just a handful of tricks which are fantastic, and they are slightly more combat proficient. I probably wouldn't use a frontline warlock myself, but it's possible, it's doable, and it's potentially disgusting.
So it's almost like, yeah, they may not do much, but what they do super well.
Yes, absolutely. As I said, if you make a frontliner warlock, you absolutely can. He won't be very much use in other roles, though. Whereas then again, if you make a ranged warlock, you've made a ranged warlock. It's a ranged warlock.
Right. It's like every other warlock ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
probably skip past alignment and religion.
So yeah, that basically just goes on. Warlocks are mostly chaotic or evil, and mostly and sometimes both, but they can be anyway they feel, depending on the character himself. A chaotic and evil warlock will be something to watch out for because they are fully embracing this dark gift. Religion, yeah, they just know about religion because they've had some deity or power greater than them genuinely intervene with them.
Right.
Then we get to background. An important line here, warlocks are born, not made. Some of the descendants of people who trafficked with demons and devils long ago, some seek out the dark powers as youths driven by ambition or the desire for power. But a few blameless individuals are simply marked out by the supernatural forces as conduits and tools. The exact nature of a warlock's origin is up to the player to decide, just as a sorcerer is not beholden to the magic-wielding ancestor that bequeathed his bloodline with arcane power. A warlock is not bound to follow the source of that gift, the source that gifted him with magic. Warlocks are not half-fiends or tieflings by default, although many creatures of those kinds become some of the most powerful and terrifying representatives of the class. Yeah, tieflings are mostly evil in this still because they're basically hellspawn.
Yeah. Not misunderstood, they are evil.
The mark that the supernatural power leaves on their servants is often a mark in the soul, not the flesh. In fact, many warlocks are created by non-evil powers, wild or fey forces that can be every bit as dangerous as demons or devils. Whatever their origin, warlocks are wildly feared and misunderstood. Most are wanderers who rarely stay in one place for long. So, one of the ideas that I like is that you're basically a chosen one, whether you're chosen by a good or a evil or a fey, which just does whatever they want.
Yeah.
But you don't know why, because you're just a pawn in this cosmic game that some power that's just far beyond you is just like, you know what? I really want this Gavin Thurnham of 33 Lindy Beige Drive to be my next champion. Are you going to tell him about it, sir? Nope. Let him work it out. That could be dangerous, sir.
Watching them scurry around is half the fun.
Yeah, and especially for
Fae.
Well, Fae or demons, really. They're chaotic. They don't... Like, just giving someone the power to microwave someone else's face off, but not telling them why, is going to cause chaos. The kind of chaos that demons would love.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's skip on to role. A warlock serves much the same role in an adventuring party as a sorcerer or wizard would. He is much more limited in his abilities compared to the spell selection of his spellcasters, and he must rely on his Eldritch Blast in place of the spell power of an arcane caster.
Oh, that's where it comes from. That's why everybody spams Eldritch Blast in 5th edition. It comes from this.
Yeah, you spam Eldritch Blast in this. Like a bard, he often fits best in a party that already has another spellcaster or two, since his unique abilities provide him with little magic to use for his companion's benefit. So, yeah, there's a lot of beating around the bush here, but yeah, they really know next to no spells. Saying they know next to no spells is being generous to the amount of spells they know.
I just think it's funny because, like, my first actually rolled character, I know I've talked about Martin the Sad Barbarian. He was the first character I rolled for a 5th edition campaign, but my very first 5th edition character was a warlock named Tabitha Von Splotch, and she had all kinds of spells, and I had options to use them. But because I was getting my feet wet and stuff, and I'm just, like, it just turns out that Eldritch Blast is the way to go. Even though I had other spells at my disposal that I definitely could have used. It feels a little bit frustrating, I guess, now. Knowing that 3rd edition, it's like, okay, well, here's what you have. This is all you have. So you are gonna have to use it, where it's like in 5th edition, it's like, oh, here's all this stuff, but really, we just want you to use this one thing. Why don't you just limit the class at that point?
You see, yeah, they don't even have spell slots in this. We'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah.
So, as we said, they are slightly better in combat. They have a D6 hit die instead of the D4 for the sorcerer.
So, meteor.
They like to have a high charisma score to make their invocations harder to resist.
Makes
However,
sense.
They don't actually have to have any invocations that have a resistance, so you don't need charisma at all if you don't want it. High dexterity is valuable to a warlock, allowing him to better aim his Eldritch Blast. It also stacks with the fact that they're only having light armor and no shields. So AC is good.
Yes.
And a good constitution score is also useful, as it is for everyone.
Oh, you know, it just occurred to me, since they don't really have spell slots and they don't really use spells, there's probably not that ridiculous arcane spell failure thing going for them. Or is there?
Let us see the horrible text wall that is to come, because this was the text wall that put me off the first time I saw it.
Oh, the class features?
Yeah, well, let's go through skills. You get you get the normal, quote-unquote normal, 2+ intelligence modifier skill ranks, which lets you custom out your character. Bluff, concentration, craft, disguise, intimidate, jump, knowledge, arcana, knowledge of the planes, knowledge of religion, profession, sense motive, spellcraft, and use magical device. These honestly do fit it very well. What have we got? We got bluff, disguise, intimidate. Those are all charisma-driven chicanery skills. They're the ones that let you do the weird fun stuff.
Right.
Concentration is good to avoid losing your spell-like abilities when you cast them. Like with spells, they can be interrupted. Knowledge Arcana makes sense because you're doing magic. Knowledge of the planes makes sense because you've got extra dimensional beings running through your blood. Knowledge religion, again, extra dimensional beings. I think everyone has craft and profession. Sense motive is a useful skill. You've got your spellcraft, which again is because you're doing some spell stuff. Use magical device. That's going to become really useful later on. Aha! That's a surprise tool for later. So, yeah, let's get into the features. So, very simply, weapon and armor proficiency, you get all simple weapons and light armor. No shields, just those things. So you've got clubs, spears, leather jackets, chain shirts, crossbows.
Sounds kind of edgy
are your options.
Already.
Yeah, you'll
leather,
never be using
leather jackets and swords. Really?
Oh god, yes. No, you're not proficient with swords. I said clubs.
Oh, I'm sorry. So you gotta put on your leather jacket to go out clubbing, I get it.
But, elves are racially proficient with long swords, so you could have a really edgy elf warlock.
Yeah.
With a katana and a leather trench coat.
Yep. Let's go be Neo.
Technically entirely raw. So because the somatic components required for warlock invocations are relatively simple, a warlock can use any of the invocations while wearing light armor without incurring the normal arcane spell failure chance. However, like arcane spellcasters, a warlock wearing medium or heavy armor or using a shield incurs a chance of arcane failure. All invocations, including Eldritch Blast, have a somatic component, which requires one hand to do a gesture. So two-handed weapons are right out.
You only need one hand to flip off your enemy. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, you can. A multi-class warlock still incurs the normal arcane spell failure chance for arcane spells received from levels in other classes. So, yeah. When you're casting wizardy spells with your wizard spell levels, your armor counts against you. When you're doing warlocky stuff with warlocky stuff, if it's light armor, no one cares. That's the first bit of headache. Here's the rest of it. Invocations. You know what? It is honestly a whole 3/4 of a page.
Hang on. Where does it end? It ends at Eldritch Blast. Okay.
Yeah, a whole half page later.
All right. So I'm going to speed read through this, everybody. It's going to be fun. Invocations. A warlock does not prepare or cast spells as other wielders of arcane magic do. Instead, he possesses a repertoire of attacks, defenses, and abilities known as invocations that require him to focus the wild energy that suffuses his soul. A warlock can use any invocation he knows at will with the following qualifications. A warlock's invocations are spell-like abilities. Using an invocation is therefore a standard action that provokes attacks of opportunity. An invocation can be disrupted, just as a spell can be ruined during casting.
A warlock is entitled to concentration check to successfully use an invocation if he is hit by an attack while invoking, just as a spellcaster would be. A warlock can choose to use an invocation defensively by making a successful concentration check to avoid provoking attacks of opportunity. A warlock's invocations are subject to spell resistance unless an invocation's description specifically states otherwise. A warlock's caster level with his invocations is equal to his warlock level. The save DC for an invocation, if it allows a save, is 10 plus the equivalent spell level plus the warlock's charisma modifier. Since the spell-like abilities are not actually spells, a warlock cannot benefit from the spell focus feat. He can, however, benefit from the ability focus feat, as well as from other feats that emulate metamagic feats for spell-like abilities, such as quicken spell-like ability and empower the spell-like ability. The four grades of invocations, in order of their relative power, are least, lesser, greater, and dark. A warlock begins with knowledge of one invocation, which must be one of the lowest grade least. As a warlock gains levels, he learns new invocations as summarized on table 1-1 and described below. A list of available invocations can be found following this class description, and the complete description of each invocation can be found in chapter 4 of this book. At any level, when a warlock learns a new invocation, he can also replace an invocation he already knows with another invocation of the same or a lower grade. At 6th level, a warlock can replace a least invocation he knows with a different least invocation, in addition to learning a new invocation, which could be either least or lesser. At 11th level, a warlock can replace a least or lesser invocation he knows with another invocation of the same or lower grade, in addition to learning a new invocation, which could be least, lesser, or greater. At 16th level, a warlock can replace a least, lesser, or greater invocation he knows with another invocation of the same or a lower grade, in addition to learning a new invocation, which could be least, lesser, greater, or dark.
Finally, unlike other spell-like abilities, invocations are subject to arcane spell failure chance, as described under weapon and armor proficiency above. Warlocks can qualify for some prestige classes usually intended for spellcasters. Oh my god. You know what this is like?
An entirely new game system?
No, this is exactly like, this is like haggling.
Haggling?
This is haggling. You can, or maybe not haggling, but, you can bring your, redeem this coupon for an item of lesser or much lesser value.
Yeah. That is the first textbook, and my relatively young to D&D mind just sort of went, this is too many words.
God, you know what? This is like talking to Bubs from Homestar Runner. Straight up, this is the Bubs class.
So, considering that it is explaining an entirely new game mechanic that is exclusive to this one class, I think they did well putting it in just one half page.
Oh, yeah.
And you read it so quickly, it was amazing. Basically, they don't have spells, they have spell-like abilities. Spell-like abilities work just like spells, but they don't use slots.
Nope, they use coupons.
No. So any invocation they know of the very small number, at level 1 it's one least invocation and Eldritch Blast. That's all they know. But they can do them at will.
That's true. So they can do them all the time. Whenever they want.
Yeah, we'll have a look at some of the invocations in a bit, but let me just give you a quick example of one of the least ones.
Darkness.
There you go, that's an easy one. So you can use
darkness
as the spell. Right? So you cast the darkness spell every round for free. Well, as it costs a standard action, but it doesn't physically cost you anything. A wizard can cast darkness only the number of times they've prepared it, up to the number of slots they have. A sorcerer can only cast darkness as many times as they have spell lots, if they know the spell. You know this one spell, and you can cast it 100 times in the day.
I feel like the sun's too bright. Not anymore.
Yep. Some of them are pretty cool. So, yeah, let's come back to these, because they are really... Faith, do you want to speed read the next bit for Eldritch Blast?
Sure. I'll speed read Eldritch Blast.
The first ability a warlock learns is Eldritch Blast. A warlock attacks his foes with Eldritch Power, using baleful magic energy, to deal damage and sometimes impart other debilitating effects. An Eldritch Blast is a ray with a range of 60 feet. It is a ranged touch attack that affects a single target, allowing no saving throw.
Oh, it's kind of like Magic Missile.
An Eldritch Blast steals 1d6 points of damage at first level and increases in power as the warlock rises in level.
Oh, that's not like Magic Missile.
An Eldritch Blast is the equivalent of a spell whose level is equal to 1/2 the warlock's class level rounded down, with a minimum spell level of first and a maximum level of 9th when the warlock reaches 18th level or higher. An Eldritch Blast is subject to spell resistance.
Okay, not like Magic Missile.
Although the spell penetration feat and other effects that improve caster level checks to overcome spell resistance also apply to Eldritch Blast. An Eldritch Blast deals half damage to objects. Metamagic feats cannot improve a warlock's Eldritch Blast because it's a spell-like ability, not a spell. However, the feat ability-focused Eldritch Blast increases the DC for all saving throws, if any, associated with a warlock's Eldritch Blast by 2.
Okay.
So yeah, that's pretty easy. Though, again, it's a lot of words. So, you throw raw magical energy at someone. A sorcerer has a similar thing where they sort of channel energy out, but they refine it in the form of a spell. And a wizard also emulates a spell with the energy. Whereas with the warlock, they just throw energy at you. Just blast you with a nuclear ray and just hope it works.
Yeah, this is just primordial power. Have fun.
So it's a ray. A ray is a straight line from you and the target. Easy. Range is 60 foot. That means that your range is not 90 foot. It is a ranged touch attack that affects a single target. This is the absolute kicker. The touch attack part. So you've all calculated your ACs before. Even if you're really new to any D&D, and even if you're like a super diehard 5th edition fan, you should probably know how 3rd edition didn't really have just one AC. We had technically 3. Technically 4 if I want to include spell resistance, but that's pushing it. Basically, you have two kinds of defense. You have your ability to dodge out of the way, and that's stuff like deflection bonuses, dexterity bonus, dodge bonuses, and you have things that physically hold stuff, such as your shield and your armor, and your natural armor if you have like scales or, you know, just a huge pair of leathery wings or something. And so when you calculate your AC, you use all of these. You use your ability, your dexterity and your dodge bonuses to dodge out of the way, and your shield and your armor blocked anything that you couldn't dodge. So you had everything there. So your dexterity plus your armor plus your shield. Very easy. You also had your flat-footed AC, which is when you're not paying attention, basically.
That's your surprise attack AC.
Yeah, which you don't get your dexterity to, because you're not able to dodge stuff that you can't see. So to that, you just get your shield and your armor, and the base 10. And that's your flat-footed AC. You also get a touch AC, because sometimes things don't need to exceed the defense of your armor, they just need to make contact with you, like a paintball bullet. Like, to shoot you with a real gun, I would need to beat your ability to dodge, then I'd need to beat the defenses of your body armor, and then I do damage. With a paintball, it touches you, and that counts. You can be wearing full riot gear, and it doesn't matter. Paintball bullet touches you, pop. That's it.
Nobody's immune to paint.
Yeah.
Nobody.
So this calculation is, for the most part, just 10, the base 10, always count the base 10, any size modifier that you have. Large things have a -1, small things have a +1, and larger and smaller things have larger and smaller modifiers deviating from 0 at medium. So 10 plus your size plus your dex. So for example, that full plate paladin over there, he's got a 10 plus 1 in his dex, plus 8 from his armor, plus 2 from his shield, and he's got a spell of protection from whoever you are. That gives him a plus 2 deflection bonus. So when you try to punch him or stab him with a spear, his AC is 10 plus 1 plus 8 plus 2 plus 2.
But when you're a warlock, you're just lobbing paintballs at him.
So that's like 23. To overcome his defenses and whatnot. But with the warlock's touch attack, you only count his base 10, his size, which is 0, his dexterity of 1, and the deflection bonus. I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the deflection bonus. So that's like a 13. You ignore 10 points of his armor. Touch attacks are awesome.
Yeah, they are.
The downside of this is that it does less damage than a greatsword. For now.
But the other thing, too, though, is you can cast it pretty much infinitely in an encounter. Provided you're not interrupted. Which, you know, if you do it right, you won't be.
Yep. And then the rest of that was just what spell level it counts as and spell resistance, which is all fine. At level 2 now, so that was all level 1. And I read all that, and I just thought, my brain just sort of froze up, and I just thought, oh, I'm really sorry. You can't play this. I don't like the look of it. And I genuinely feel bad about it, because I do not think the Warlock is overpowered in 3rd edition like I originally did. And I'm more than happy, next time we have a game, that this person would play a Warlock. In fact, I'm writing something right now, and a Warlock would be abusively good at it. but let's continue. Level 2, yes. We get Detect Magic.
Well, we already know about Detect Magic.
At will, you don't cast Detect Magic.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Sorry, it's Detect Magic, but you could do it at will, which is, you know, that's awesome.
That's pretty awesome. It is pretty much parallel to the Paladin's Detect Evil at will ability. Though detecting magic is much more useful than detecting evil, I think. Starting at 3rd level, you get damage reduction.
Ooh.
So at 3rd level, every time you take damage from a sword or a spear or an arrow trap, you reduce the damage by 1, unless it was made by a cold iron weapon, which incidentally is the same weapon that damages fey creatures, because you're otherworldly.
Aha! Makes sense. Deceive item? What?
Hang on. Oh, am I getting
ahead of myself here?
Yeah.
Oh.
At 7th level and every 4 levels thereafter, a warlock's damage reduction improves by 1, basically.
Oh, that's cool.
At level 19 then, I think it is? Yeah, level 19, it's damage reduction 5, which is not to be sniffed at. It sounds small, but it's not to be sniffed at. So yeah, the next one, Faith has jumped ahead a little bit, but deceive item at 4th level. I'll tell you what, you were shocked. You can read it.
Okay. At 4th level and higher, a warlock has the ability to more easily commandeer magic items made for the use of other characters. When making a use magic device check, a warlock can take 10, even if distracted or threatened. So hypothetically, you could use some kind of magic item that would benefit a cleric. He can kind of trick the energy into making the item recognize him as a cleric?
Yes.
That's so cool!
In one hand, he can hold a wand of Cure Light Wounds. In the other hand, he can hold a wand of Firebolts. Scorching Ray, even, sorry. And he can whisper into the wand, the sun's really cool. Like, Pella's a total bro. Hail Pella. And then the wand fires because he has tricked the wand into thinking that he is, in fact, a cleric. And the next turn, he can lean into the other one and like, you might think I'm not a wizard, or I might not know this spell, but I really do know this spell. So, yeah, if you could go ahead and shoot, that'd be cool. And then fire his Scorching Bolt because... to use wands, you need to have basically they are basically just extra slots for you.
That's so cool.
So if you don't have Scorching Ray on your spell list, you can't cast a wand of Scorching Ray because you don't know the spell. You have a stick in your hand that does a thing, but you don't know how to do the thing. Whereas if you have a stick in the hand that does a thing you know how to do, you can make the stick do that thing for you.
You know, this feels very Loki-like to me.
Oh god, yeah, Loki would definitely be a warlock.
See, and the reason I say this is, like, it's not like you're really... I mean, I like the idea of you, you know, bluff-checking an item, but it almost feels like you as a warlock, because you have access to primordial energy, because it's not spells, it's not refined, what you're doing is you are essentially kind of sort of shaping it, not totally refining it, but at least giving your magic signature the vague shape of Cure Light Wounds or Fire, you know, or Scorching Ray, so that the wand is tricked by it. I mean, like, I like that idea. It's a very sneaky thing to do.
And just to spin a couple of little bit of maths onto that, to use a wand with the Use Magic Device skill, because you don't have the spell, is a DC 20 check, which is pretty high, but it's very attainable, especially as now you can take 10 on the test. And what that means is that you don't roll the D20, you just say, I rolled a 10. That's all it is. So you've got this now flat base 10. Your fourth level, which means that you can have 7 ranks in Use Magic Device. And it's a charisma-based skill, so if you have a +3 charisma modifier, 7 ranks, and take 10, you never roll that D20, and you just turn to the GM and say, I rolled a 20, because that's how taking 10 works. That's how DCs work. You add some numbers up and roll a dice, but this time you place the dice roll with a number. So from 4th level, you can use any wand.
It's so cool. I like warlocks.
Alternatively, like I said earlier, you don't have to have a hugely high charisma if you don't want to as a warlock. So for example, can take the skill focus feat, which gives you +3 in a skill, which would mean that a charisma 10 is still getting the 10 plus 7 plus 3 to cast the spell. And if you take the feat and have some charisma, you can maybe not put so many ranks and use magic device and spend them elsewhere for jumping and crafting stuff and profession skills. You can just do a bunch of stuff. There's a bunch of stuff you can do. That's what I'm getting at here. The next one is Fiendish Resilience. Beginning at 8th level, a warlock knows the trick of Fiendish Resilience. Once per day, as a free action, you can enter a state that lasts for 2 minutes, which is 20 rounds. While in this state, the warlock gains Fast Healing 1. So for once per day, for 20 rounds, a warlock gets 1 hit point back at the start of every round.
That's so cool.
That's pretty cool. At 13th level, a warlock's Fiendish Resilience improves. When his Fiendish Resilience state, he gains Fast Healing 5. At 18th level, this moves to +5. So, yeah, when you're level 20 warlock, you've got 20 rounds of +5 hit points, which is pretty fucking badass. You ignore 5 points of damage, from every attack that isn't made of cold iron. Yeah, that's all pretty cool. What's next? Energy resistance, yeah.
At 10th level and higher, a warlock has resistance 5 against any 2 of the following energy types: acid, cold, electricity, fire, and sonic. Once the types are chosen, this energy resistance cannot be changed. At 20th level, a warlock gains resistance 10 against the 2 selected types of energy.
So yeah, this works the same as damage reduction. Resistance in 3rd edition isn't like in 5th edition. 5th edition is just you take half damage from it. In 3rd edition, it's you reduce it by a fixed number. So if you take, for example, 8 points of fire damage, fire resistance in 5th edition, you take 4 points of damage. In 3rd edition, You take 8 points of fire damage, but you have fire resistance 10. You take no damage. Someone pointed out to me the ring of fire resistance is a bit odd, because if you roll a d6 because you burnt yourself cooking, you're still taking 1 point of fire damage. But if you take 100 points of damage from a fire dragon, you're still taking 50. Because it's only halved, it's not a static number. But yeah, so that starts at 5 and increases to 10, which is really useful, because that's for free, and it's for two energy types: acid, cold, fire, and sonic. Fire is probably the most common one. If you take cold, I believe you can pretty much just live in a desert, because as long as it doesn't get insanely hot at the daytime and insanely cold at night, you should be pretty fine in a much broader category than most people. And when it goes up to resistance 10, then you're pretty fine. And the last ability is imbue item. And this one's kind of bullshit. A warlock of 12th level or higher can use his supernatural power to create magic items, even if he does not know the spells required to make the item, although he must know the appropriate item creation feat. He can substitute a used magic device check with a DC of 15 plus the spell level for the arcane spell, or 25 plus the spell level for divine spells, in place of a required spell check that he doesn't know or can't cast. If the check succeeds, the warlock can create the item as if he had cast the required spell. If it fails, he cannot complete the item, he doesn't expend XP or gold costs for making the item, his progress is simply arrested. He cannot retry you magical dice until he gains a new level. So, yeah, to make a wand of Scorching Ray. He doesn't know the spell. He just has a twig in his hand, and he's just like, be a wand of Scorching Ray. And it does. It's that simple. Kind of crazy, honestly, but...
Yeah.
Level 12 onwards, you're doing some crazy stuff. So that is all a lot of goodness, and we've gone through so much stuff already, and this is why I was so off-put by it, because it was so many things happening.
It's a dense little class.
But that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
The add-ons are very, very small. So we now get on to Warlock Invocations. Now, at level 1... you know Eldritch Blast, and one invocation of the least power. So your level 1 will know one of a fantastically tiny amount of things. When you get to level 20, you learn your 12th invocation. 12th. Not all of these are spells. For example... Least Eldritch Essence Invocation. So an Essence Invocation adds an effect to your Eldritch Blast.
So kind of like your Eldritch Blast can cause fear or wounding or something.
Yeah, exactly that. Frightful Blast and Sickening Blast. Frightful Blast, target must make a will save or become shaken. Sickening Blast, target must make a fortitude save or become sickened. So at level 1... you know one of those. Or you know a shape invocation. You can have one essence and one shape invocation on the same Eldritch Blast, but you can't have multiple shapes. So the shape ones are for the least power. Your Eldritch Blast range increases to 250 feet, which is a lot of feet.
Yeah.
It's like 125 people. Thank you for laughing. And Hideous Blow. You can add your Eldritch Blast damage to a melee attack damage. So you can do... I can try and hit you with a club, and I have to attack your full AC instead of your touch AC, because I'm hitting you with a club. When you're hit with the club, you take the D6 from the club, you take the strength from my arm, and you take 1D6 from the Eldritch Blast.
That can add up really quickly.
Yes, you could definitely do some weird stuff with this. And then we've got the other invocations, which are mostly knockoff spells. So I mentioned earlier...
Darkness.
You know, the darkness spell. So at level 1, that's it. You have a 60-foot 1d6 touch weapon, which is tiny. It's barely enough to kill goblins. And you can cast
Darkness.
That's it. The ones they've got are Baleful Utterance, speak a word of dark speech and shatter objects as the Shatter spell. So you cast the Shatter spell. Beguiling Influence, you gain a bonus on Diplomacy, Bluff, and Intimidate checks. I can't remember what the bonus was. I think it's a +6.
That's not nothing. That's actually a pretty hefty bonus.
Might be a little bit lower then. I'm really not 100% sure, if I'm honest, because it just says bonus. Breath of the Night, create a Fog Cloud as the spell. Fog Cloud is one of my favorite spells of its level.
So, like, I love the clouds. All of these are basically a warlock just kind of sort of morphing his magic signature into spells. But they're not as potent, I guess?
Yeah.
Or they can be just as potent, but it's just like, this is all he can do.
Yeah, it is, that's the thing. That is absolutely all they can do. For example, one of the lesser invocations is Fell Flight. You gain a fly speed with good maneuverability. I think it's basically just the fly spell. But when you get to lesser invocations, you're level 6, and that's one of the 4 invocations you know. So if you can fly, you've got Eldritch Blast, Flight, and 3 other things.
You know, this is going to sound weird, but it, with how few invocations you can learn. You said you have 12 by the time you hit 20.
Yep.
Like, it's just because it just hit me with the, you know, because people say warlocks are edgy and all that. All I could think of is, get all of these things tattooed onto your skin. Like, the reason you have the resilience is that it's basically, it's just like you're branded with it.
I would be absolutely fine seeing someone roleplay that. That would be pretty cool.
Like, you're and as you learn more and more invocations, depending on like how evil you are or what have you, you either become like scarred and disfigured, or you just get looking tats. But either way, you're still kind of, you know, disconcerting to look at.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty cool with that. But yeah, so you have got these really cool powers. Like, Noxious Blast. Target must make a fortitude save or become nauseated. Awesome. Eldritch Chain. Blast jumps from initial target to a second target to secondary targets. Awesome. So multiple targets. Void Sense, gain Blind Sense, 30 feet, just for free, anytime you do it. Or Walk Unseen, use Invisibility, self only, as the spell. Those are all really cool, but each and every one of them take up such a large proportion of your abilities that you have to make the right choices. But you don't get spell slots, you don't need short rests, you just can always cast these whenever you like.
So, You get a handful of things, and you do them so very well.
Beguiling Influence. You can invoke this ability to beguile and bewitch your foes. You gain a +6 bonus on Bluff, Diplomacy, Intimidation checks for a period of 24 hours.
Wow.
So, yeah, a lot of these things, a lot of the invocation knockoff spells last for 24 hours. Like, Fell Flight, when you use this invocation, the powers of darkness bear you aloft as you sprout a streaming wing-like cape of shadows. You fly at a speed equal to your land speed with good maneuverability for 24 hours.
Oh, so you could look like Archangel Tyriel from Diablo 2.
Yeah, you just look really
That's
fucking
pretty
edgy.
Cool.
Spider Walk is one of the least invocations, so you can get this one at level 1. You grant yourself the ability to spider climb as the spell with a duration of 24 hours. While this invocation is in effect, you are unaffected by webs, either magical or mundane. So yeah, the duration being 24 hours is honestly nothing of note, because you can cast them every turn for free. But yeah, I think they are a really neat class. I genuinely feel bad for telling that person no, but I was new, so I don't really feel like I was wrong. But yeah, they have a lot of potential. They definitely are mostly just going to be slinging Eldritch Blast. But because of the, what was it, Hideous Blow, as a standard action, you can make a single melee attack. If you hit, the target is affected as if struck by your Eldritch Blast, including any Eldritch Essence applied to that blast. This damage is in addition to any weapon damage that you deal with your attack, although you need not deal damage with this attack to trigger the Eldritch Blast effect. So you can do so much bullshit with this. If you've got like a half fighter, half warlock thing going on, you can absolutely have a Wand of True Strike in your pocket. Use your Wand of True Strike, which in 3rd edition gives you a plus 20 to your attack roll and ignores mischances from things being in cover or whatnot. Now you've got a plus 20 to hit, plus 7 from your class levels, plus whatever from your strength, and then you put the wand away, draw the sword, the great sword, your plus 1 flaming great sword of nonsense, and then you use your power attack feat to reduce the attack roll by 7, to add 14 to the damage. And you're still rolling your strength plus 20 plus the d20 to hit. You hit, and then that person takes 2d6 from the greatsword, 1d6 from the fire, 2d6 from your Eldritch Blast, and probably, we'll say, a fort save to avoid being sickened from the blast. Plus 14 from the feet, and it's just... You just take a lot of stuff. That was a very... technical idea that I had going through there, sorry.
That's okay. That is why you were here, Lewis. You were the tech guy.
Yay.
Sorry, and I'm also just kind of like looking at the invocations description pages, and I love how D&D books are set up. So this is like a complete total curveball to what we were talking about, but I have the PDF set up for horizontal scrolling, and I'm going to put this on our Twitter too, but it's got a picture of, what's his name, Morthos, on page 134, casting a spell, and then on page 135, he's killing some goblins with
yes.
an Eldritch Blast. It's amazing. I love it. I love how these books are set up like this.
I really do love the art in 3rd edition.
Oh, yeah.
It's all very good. In fact, the artist for that particular page...
Oh, it's Eldritch Chain, my bad.
Well, it's Eldritch Blast with Eldritch Chain added to it.
Yeah, that's its essence.
But if you look on the left-hand margin, Faith, from the pages that you'll be putting up later, it'll say Illus by M. Moore. And that's illustrated by Mr. M. Moore, which then you can normally go into the front of the book and it will say who all the artists are in this book. And then you can go, M. Moore is Monty Moore. And then you've got yourself your artist. And that's how, you know, I found folk like Elmore and Caldwell, because I really do love the old arts. There are quite a few pieces I like in the new stuff, but there's such an overwhelming amount of the old art that I love. I have an Elmore print in my living room, and I've got 2 Caldwell prints, Clyde Caldwell prints, hanging about the house, because I just love the way they look.
Art's fun. And we're here to have fun.
I think we have had fun. We are really sorry that we should have been, but I think we're back now.
Yeah, I mean, that was mostly my fault, because I was having some major life events unfold pretty rapidly, but...
No, it's fine.
So that's, like, things are evening out now, and I can get back into the swing of, like, editing stuff and being productive. It was just a lot of things just happened all at once, and I just couldn't keep up, so I kind of just, like, I'm just gonna... reprioritize for a little bit. And
self-care is a thing, and like, you don't even have to earn the right to self-care.
Yeah,
I do need to get more active on Twitter. If anyone has anything they would like to see for Daily Spell, which has been very forgotten, do let us know. If you want us to do a podcast on something, let us know. If you want, I don't know, if you want us to spend 2 hours talking about gelatinous cubes. Yeah, I mean, we'll do it. Like, we love D&D, and we love talking about it. And every time I see someone come up with a question, just like, hey, why does this obscure thing do this weird thing? And it's like, I don't know. Let's have a look. And then you spend the next 3 days looking into it, and it's like, ah, gelatinous cubes can float, and therefore should be used in naval warfare.
What? Oh, we are definitely doing an episode on gelatinous cubes now.
Yeah, like I could tell you a couple of things, but if we're going to do an ooze episode.
Yes.
An ooze episode. I don't know. You can tell us what to name it as well. Fuck it. Who cares?
Oh, man.
We can release it on an ooze day.
Wait, yes, would that be Tuesday, or would that be...
No, the tea got melted.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I like this. I like this plan.
I definitely had a lot of fun coming back to this.
Oh, yeah. Same here. Oh, it's good to be back. So, my hot take on Warlocks, I think because we covered everything, because it's, like, it's a dense class, but it's compact.
The bit that you sped read were... the bit that put me off my friend playing it the first time, because all of that says is, yeah, just ignore everything about how these things work, but what you're getting in a return for that is such a small range of power.
Right.
So you don't get spell slots. You don't have to wake up in the morning and prepare spells. You don't have to do anything. You just need to go, boom, laser beam. Boom! Laser beam. Boom! This laser beam makes you sick.
I would like to play a warlock at some point. The hyper-focus behind it kind of intrigues me, and it appeals to me. So, especially because I'm one of those people that you put me in a sandbox, and I'm just kind of paralyzed by choice. Like, I can do anything. Okay, great. Now what am I going to do? So, having something like this where it's limited in a way, that appeals to me, because it's like, okay, I've got a box that I can play in, but it's, you know, it's...
throw this box at you every turn, but okay.
Yeah, so I've got this box, but it's a reasonably large box, but it's only big enough to hold these things, and that's fine. I can get behind that.
But before we sign off on this, I want to say I have said many times that the warlock doesn't have very much versatility, and just to be sure, it does have a versatility. But the more versatility you put in, I think you get. Not diminishing returns, it's just, yeah, the class is kind of funky. Like, I don't really know how else to say it.
You know, I just had another idea, as far as, like, if you were to have a warlock-centric campaign, you could put it in ancient mythical Greek setting, where you aren't specifically making a pact, but you are essentially a demigod. Everybody is a warlock, essentially. Every demigod is a warlock. So,
yeah.
I feel like there's a way to work that.
Probably.
And you're, you know, and your whole purpose is to, you know, pull from that one meme that went around for a while, it still goes around periodically, is you want to punch Zeus in the face.
I mean, who doesn't?
I know.
Just
Eldritch blast him right in the face.
Um, is just kind of ridiculous. I absolutely love it.
I do too. If we ever get around to doing another, like, guest one shot, two shot, potential campaign shot thing,
yeah,
I would like to play a warlock.
Absolutely can. Speaking of, we should probably do like the third part of that at some point.
Oh, where we go back to get the coupon?
Yeah, you've got no friends and a missing coupon.
Man, I super hope that Gip makes an appearance. Anyway.
I actually had my friend turn to me the other day. He just typed in Discord, skin condition!
That's perfect.
the joke is now canon.
Yay! It's a meme!
Yay! Skin condition!
Like, it's a skin condition.
That's Warlocks. And a ramble.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? That's what we're known for. So, so until next time, dear listeners.
Keep adventuring. Have fun.
Heck yeah. Bye, everybody.
Ciao.
As always, special thanks to Tim from Tabletop Audio for our theme music and Chris for our sweet art, and an extra special thanks to you, dear listeners, because we wouldn't be here without your support. Hit us up on Twitter @GrumpyDeck or jump into our Discord in the pinned tweet. We'll see you next time.